Welcome to the Paleo View. I'm Stacey Toth from PaleoParents.com. You might also know me as the Broth Lady, or the inventor of the hashtag More Vegetables Than a Vegetarian. I'm the co-author of several paleo cookbooks, including Eat Like a Dinosaur, Beyond Bacon, and Real Like Paleo. I like to talk about health at any size, and self-love, and personal acceptance. Specifically, I have a love for lifting heavy things. If you're interested in finding more out about that, you can also find me on Strong Woman Radio.
And I'm Dr. Sarah Valentine with PaleoMom.com. I'm the New York Times best-selling author of The Paleo Approach and The Paleo Approach Cookbook. I'm passionate about nutrient density and the intersection of diet and lifestyle with health, which really means I just love talking about science.
News and news, where Sarah and I catch up, you get to listen to our gossip. So welcome back to the Paleo View, everyone. This week we have a special guest with us, Jonathan Baylor, who's been on the show before, New York Times bestselling author of The Calorie Myth, and now of The Sane Solution. Welcome back to the Paleo View. How are you?
Hey, I'm great. Thank you so much for having me back.
Sarah's here too, of course.
I am here too, and I was just enjoying Jonathan.
New York Times bestselling author, Dr. Sarah Valentine of the Paleo Approach. Welcome to the Paleo Review.
Stacey, I would like to make a request for the beginning of every show from now on. I was just enjoying. Jonathan has like the perfect like radio podcast voice, right? Like it's just voice over. You've got that voice. And so it's like just really fun. It's really fun to listen to. You can just like say anything now and I'll just be like, oh, this is such a great voice.
What are you saying? You don't like listening to my voice every week?
I did not overtly say that.
We all heard what you said.
It was funny that you should mention that because one of my favorite work projects I did was Abel James, who I'm sure your listeners are all friends with. He's a great guy. He and I did some recordings together. And if you think I have a nice voice, Abel's voice puts my voice to shame. So I was like, we've got like the dynamic duo of good radio voices collaborating. So it was a lot of fun.
That does sound like a lot of fun. That sounds like, I mean, just like the kind of, I don't know, to me, I'm like, so I do guided meditation. This is an aside, totally an aside. And I have this app that I really like called Calm, and it's just a series. You can sort of pick like the intention for each guided meditation, and it'll sort of take you through different things. And to me, the idea of listening to Abel and you is kind of like the idea of listening to a guided meditation in that just calming and just like relaxing, like let the words wash over you kind of way. We will still talk about really interesting things today though. We won't just be a guided meditation for everybody. Just throwing that out there too.
I personally like you for more than your voice, Jonathan.
I didn't say I only liked him for his voice. All right, fine.
I was sad that you were not PaleoFX this year.
I was very sad as well. I was joking actually, because depending on how this conversation went, we might have to call this like, you know, the Paleo View After Hours or something like that.
That could still happen. Stacey, are you drinking right now?
No, unfortunately, I've sobered up. I haven't had a drink lately.
I am only drinking herbal tea. So, okay, that probably won't happen then, Jonathan. This is probably going to be really boring. I missed seeing you at PaleoFX. Like, I don't know. I just assumed you'd be there. And I was like, where's Jonathan, everybody? He's not here. What's going on?
I appreciate that. Yeah, I'm going to try to make – I've been unavailable this year. We've got some stuff going on that has required my focused attention, but I'm hoping next year to be back on the conference circuit. So it should be good.
Focused attention. I'm going to ask you about focused attention after we're no longer recording, and you can actually tell us about all the cool stuff you're working on.
Okay, that sounds good.
Well, one of the reasons why we love having you on the show is because you are really a very unique voice in this community, because I think you sort of arrive at very similar principles to, I think, what are sort of the core, you know, nutrient density, move your body, sleep enough, manage stress type principles of paleo. But you have this way of sharing that information with the world that is sort of tangential to paleo, right? You don't use the word paleo in your educational materials, but it resonates so well with people. And it's such a, I think, fantastic entry point for people into making healthy changes that are really going to have huge impacts on their physical and emotional health, while making it very approachable. So I sort of, you know, I think of you as, I think there's a few different people out there who talk a little bit more about nutrient density. And, you know, your big thing is the quality of your calories rather than the quantity of your calories. And I think there's a lot of us within the community who are sort of saying that same message, Stacey and I being two of them, who are saying that same message within a paleo template. But what I love about the work that you're doing is you're sort of bringing those concepts to the general public in a way that doesn't have this like branded list of rules that can be really intimidating for people. And we really saw that in the calorie myth, which I will just tell people that we talked about the last time you were on the show, and we can have Monica put a link to that podcast in the show notes. But I think that's like even more ramped up with sanesolution.com. You've got like an entire program for people. And I think it's really, really amazing what you're doing in terms of distilling what I think can be quite complex scientific concepts into, you know, something that's just really, you know, easy to implement for people, right? It's just like, and voila, you just have to do this and this. And people go, oh, wait, that's all I have to do. And it just makes it so approachable, which is such an important voice in this community. And so I think instrumental in our ability to continue growing as a community.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Sarah. I had an interesting experience related to this in terms of describing what I call sane eating, which is, if you were to draw a Venn diagram, would overlap very, very heavily with a paleo eating. I was speaking with, I actually probably shouldn't mention the name, but it's a large publishing company. And we were talking about some potential marketing efforts. And the term, for example, clean eating got thrown around a lot. And, you know, whether it's clean eating, sane eating, paleo, primal, ancestral, it's really interesting to actually look at the quote unquote differences and similarities these things have, because it's become, for example, the people I was speaking with on the phone who are very influential individuals, you know, they thought clean eating and paleo were as different as veganism is with like the South Beach diet.
But I would agree with you in the sense that I think the sort of core foods or the foods that make up the majority of our diets are identical. I mean, we're eating good quality meats and seafood and vegetables. Like that's the basis. And I think where we differ is maybe in the more occasional foods. I think I would even throw in, like, I see a lot of similarities between paleo and plant-based diet people. I just think we eat more like a higher quantity of animal proteins, but mm-hmm. I think that a lot of the science that we're drawing on is very, very similar in how we find those sort of principles. And I think, you know, I always think of paleo as a plant-based diet because most of my plate's made up of plants. So yeah, I actually think that there's a lot of communities that are kind of, we're going to this sort of like whole foods, unprocessed foods, right? As close to the form that they were when it was picked. And I think that the more different ways we can actually frame this, different ways that we describe this connects with different people. And mm-hmm. I think it's amazing that there's this many different branding for something that's 80% similar, right? Like, to me, I think that's really amazing because it's going to, different approaches are going to resonate with different people, and you're going to end up changing the health of even more people by having these little differences.
Yep. And I think that there's actually a lot of power, like similar to what you said, in terms of sometimes it seems like the difference is just the name, but sometimes the difference is more than just a name, especially if you look at kind of what's the primary focus. One of the things I really enjoyed about your book was your book made it very clear that the primary focus of what you're of this journey you're going to take is a healing. Right. Like the primary focus of this, at least my take from reading your book, was this is about healing certain medical conditions. And that is a very specific goal. It's an amazing goal, but it's a different goal than, let's say, maximizing athletic performance or having the best marathon time possible or dropping as much weight as quickly as possible for a reality television show or conversation about goals, I think, is literally the Uber conversation, because I know you've had these experiences where people probably ask you, both of you, hey, is this good or bad? And it's some things are just universally bad, I guess, kind of. But to really say, is this good or bad? To me, that's not even a full sentence. You have to say, is this good or bad for blank, right? Like, is a fire truck a good car? Well, if your house is on fire, a fire truck pulling up in front is fabulous. But if you're trying to have like an efficient car to drive to and from work, a fire truck would be terrible. So there's a lot of these questions like, are sweet potatoes good?
I love like that simplistic analogy, because I think that a lot of people have a difficult time wrapping their brain about what you're saying. And I'm sorry to cut you off, but I recall early on in my days listening to a Rob Wolf podcast, and I was deep in my very low carb, high fat, intermittent fast, heavy weight loss period of paleo before I kind of understood a lot of the different nuances about hormones and my body's needs and autoimmune conditions and a lot of the different things that have come up since. And I remember him saying he got a question about, I'm trying to, lean out and put on muscle. What do I do? And I remember him having a conversation with the podcast and saying, what is it? Are you trying to get small or are you trying to get big? Because the message to your body can't be, I mean, yes, you can put on muscle and you can lose fat, but that is a very slow process that it's going to have some, you know, bumps in the road, ups and downs, but defining your goal, right? Whether that's, I want to get strong and I hope to lose fat in the process, but my goal is to build muscle or, you know, to be lean or to lose weight or, you know, for my joint pain to go away or, you know, whatever. I think it's difficult for people to fathom because our society is so wrapped around this idea that thinness equals healthiness. And so the simplistic approach of a fire truck can be really great if you have a fire, or it can be really bad if you're trying to get somewhere efficiently with gas, is one of the best analogies that I think might help people understand that it's not linear. It's not like a one answer all the time. It really depends on what it is you're trying to do. And specifically to your point, the people who read Sarah's book or a lot of our listeners are dealing with long-term health conditions that are much more important to get under control than losing those last 20 or 30 pounds. But you can have a different person who's might have health conditions because they have 200 pounds to lose, in which case then your priority is entirely different depending on your goals. So I want to acknowledge that was a fantastic analogy that I'm going to totally steal and
that
next
was
opportunity I get.
A very verbose fist bump for an analogy just happened.
But it's so, I mean, I think it's so important because I've always really loved your lady's work because you're focused on families and we're actually moving in that direction as well, just because, you know, our goal is to help end the obesity and diabetes epidemics, and that starts with families. It's awesome to see 22-year-old athletic males posting in forums on the internet, but, you know, respectfully, there's a lot of other people that need help. And that's why I really like what you guys are doing. There's a lot of middle America. There's a lot of people who aren't already passionate about nutrition that need help. And for these individuals, they are so mired in confusion, and justifiably so, because if they go out and they talk to a vegetarian who is a PhD, brilliant, and the vegetarian says, you know, this is how I eat, and the vegetarian doesn't express that the reason I eat that way is my primary goal is to not kill animals, right? Like that, it is, I cannot argue, no one can argue with a vegan that their way of eating, their existence on the planet will cause fewer animals to die Like it is, it's better at that. If your goal is to cause fewer animals to die in for human consumption, it is unarguable that vegetarianism or veganism is the best way to do that. But if your goal is, for example, metabolic healing or long-term health and happiness or athletic performance, right, there literally are different optimal strategies for each and every one of those goals. So you have this average person in middle America who's like, oh my God, I'm so confused. And in reality, the reason, or not in reality, but the reason they're confused is because they have this one goal in their mind that they might not be super clear on. And what they've heard are a bunch of different strategies to achieve a bunch of different goals, presented all as the one thing they should be doing for their goal, which is different from all those other ones. And thus they're confused.
Whoa. Yes. I think one of the things I want to add to that though, is that when some people are starting the health journey, it can be really challenging to even figure out what the goals are. So like when I started, you know, my daughter was one and I was on borderline type 2 diabetic. My blood pressure was coming back up. I had 12 diagnosed health conditions, three of which at the time were autoimmune diseases. And I was, you know, at the time I wasn't my heaviest. I was only about 270 pounds. As my heaviest, I was closer to 300. And for me at that time, I thought my primary goal was losing weight because I thought that losing weight would fix everything. And it was part of my health journey to discover that losing weight was not the same as getting healthy and that I needed to change what I was doing in order to get healthy. And I wasn't doing a calorie restricted diet. I was doing a low carbohydrate diet, but not a nutrient dense low carbohydrate diet. And it, as I lost weight, I really got less and less healthy. And it was that crisis point of, okay, so, you know, I can buy clothes in a regular store now and I can, you know, move boulders in my backyard for 4 hours and feel great, but my skin's a mess. My digestion's a mess. I've got migraines. I've got anxiety. I've got depression. Like I need a bigger solution. And one of the things that I really love about your work, besides the amazing analogies and the radio voice, is that you have this way of like, here's the starting point. Okay. So if you don't know what your goal is and you think it's as simplistic as losing weight, here's a way to lose weight that sneakily on the side is actually going to deal with a lot of those other issues. And that doesn't mean that a person's not going to then have to, as part of their healing journey, you know, do something that's more restrictive or more specific, but that it's a method of dealing with that initial goal of weight loss that is going to promote healing in most people, is going to improve cardiovascular risk factors, right? It's going to reduce, you know, regulate blood sugars, reduce diabetes, reverse insulin resistance. You know, it's going to help asthma and allergies, you know, in part because of the regulation of hormones just from choosing those types of foods, but also because of the focus and the sort of sneaky, like it's not, I mean, you say, you know, nutrition and the nutritional quality of your foods, but like that's the key, right? Getting the actual vitamins and minerals and essential fats and essential amino acids that your body actually needs for all of the chemical reactions that are happening in, you know, in every cell in every second. And what I like about it is it's kind of this like sneaky way of like, here's something that's going to work for your primary goal. And by the way, it's going to work for your secondary and tertiary goals, even though you don't even know what those goals are yet. And that doesn't mean that, you know, somebody's journey isn't going to end up being a lot more complex. But I just think as a starting place, especially for someone who sees the paleo diet and goes, that's bat bleep crazy, I'm not going to do that. I think it's really amazing to sort of turn that focus into something that's so empowering and at the same time, so effective.
Well, thank you. I mean, it's incredibly flattering to hear that. And I think you hit the nail on the head when you use the term healing, because this is one of the things I don't get to talk about very much, but is at the core of the calorie myth and some of the, if you dig deeper into my work. And that's, we often talk about things like, you know, leaky gut or diabetes or depression as one category of things, like a disease and a medical condition. But then we talk about obesity almost like it's in a different category. Like it's this just, I mean, sometimes a lot of people who do not struggle with their weight, who are naturally thin, right? They paint it as a moral issue or as a effort issue. But when you actually look at the underlying metabolic causes and metabolic markers of chronic obesity, it's in much more analogous to something like diabetes, where you have a system in your body that is extremely complicated, which is designed and intended to balance itself automatically. And that system has been broken. So you, and you know, thank God that official institutions are already starting to do this, but rightly calling obesity a disease, which then is cured through nutritional therapy rather than through starvation or deprivation. And helping people to understand that, because that is literally the opposite of the conventional eat less, exercise more, calorie counting, Weight Watchers approach, which says take an already nutritionally deficient diet and consume less of it.
So there was a paper published in the British Medical Journal 2 weeks ago, and the title was something to the effect of, "You can't outrun a bad diet. Let's put the myth of inactivity causing obesity to bed." And what's, I think, like an extra little bit of intrigue is this paper was then retracted, and there's no explanation of why it was retracted. If it was, you know, it just says due to expression of concern. But as I read through this paper, there was, you know, this very consistent amount of citations of research showing that activity level and your weight are not correlated. And what happens is, as people lose weight and change their overall health by making diet changes, is they crave more activity. And I've talked with other experts who basically see this in personal training clients or health coaching clients that they work with, that that as we get healthier, generally, we want to be more active. And it's funny because at the same time, like I see this everywhere I go, like within the paleo community, this, I know it's normally my rest day, but I'm going to go to CrossFit today because I had ice cream this morning. Or this idea of, I know I'm going to this party tomorrow night and I'm going to drink a lot, so I'm going to go for a 5-mile run today. This idea that we have to somehow exercise more to make up for any kind of diet transgressions. And it bugs me because I don't think that it's a mentally healthy perspective that, that for some reason, you know, what we eat is a debt, and that we pay that debt with activity. And I think it comes from this very old school mentality of calories in and calories out equals your weight. And it has this foothold even within the paleo community in these kind of more sneaky ways, right? People aren't thinking about calories anymore, but they're still thinking about cheating. And it's a very interesting, and I think something that really needs to be addressed in terms of just like mental health in general, as we try to improve our entire health, right? Not just our physical health, but our mental health, is having a relationship with food that doesn't mean that we have to punish ourselves by whatever it is, like whatever punishment we think we need for, you know, this concept then of cheating, right? This concept of going off the rails, and now I'm going to have to pay for it with extra activity or depriving myself for a couple of weeks, you know, to make up for, you know, whatever it was that I did. And I don't know exactly how we get to a place of a relationship with food where we see food as being, you know, what nourishes our bodies and see it as for its micronutrient value rather than its macronutrient value. And that we just see food as making the best choices we can as often as we can. And then activity is part of our healthy lifestyle, because it's great to be fast and it's great to be strong and it helps us sleep. It helps cement our circadian rhythms. It helps regulate our hormones, right? It helps boost our metabolism. Like, it has all these other health effects that are really separate from food. So we exercise because it's great to be fit, you know, and we seek activity because it makes us feel good and not because we're punishing ourselves or because we're trying to get bigger muscles for that strapless dress for the wedding, mea culpa. But like, you know, to have that very different, rather than them being linked as, you know, the transgression and the punishment, have them just be like two amazing things we do for our health and that's it. And they're not linked. Activity is not a punishment. And ice cream is okay every once in a while, right? Like, just separate those things.
Yeah, activity being a punishment it embodies two horrible things that I'm so happy to see the paleo community and many other communities working to reverse. And that is, you know, first and foremost, the portrayal of that which is phenomenal for us as bad. Like, I mean, because if you say I have to make up for doing something I enjoy with this other thing, you are subconsciously telling yourself one of these is good and one of these is bad. It's a little bit like when people say, once you eat your vegetables, you can then have dessert. I mean, what they're indirectly communicating there is vegetables are disgusting and dessert is yummy.
Right.
Right. So getting us out of that mindset of that which is objectively good for us, like, is exercise great for weight loss? No, it's not. I mean, that's been established on numerous occasions, because it's not about this diddling of calories. But is it good for us overall? I mean, of course, you know, exercise not in excess is fabulous for us. But this idea of using it as punishment or self-flagellation for cheating, or, I mean, one, it's horribly wrong psychologically, and it's also, as you know, it's just wrong biologically. It's like saying I'm going to jog off a pack of cigarettes. Like, you can't, you cannot do that. It doesn't the metaphor is wrong. You can do whatever you want to the actual calories, and that's fine. But if what you ate contains a bunch of MSG, like, jogging does nothing about the neurological inflammation that is actually going to cause you to now crave more calories long term, because your brain's satiety centers are screwed up and your brain can't accurately detect the amount of body fat you have. So it's going to over-index and cause you to overeat, even though it doesn't feel like you're overeating, right? Like, jogging does nothing to cure that neurological thing that just happened because of something completely other than calories that's found in your food.
Thank you for demonstrating your amazing skill with analogies again. And also, one of the things that you just said that, like, was a little, it was just this little drop thing, but I just want to thank you for saying it, was that exercise in excess is not healthy for us. And we've talked about it before on this podcast, and I have a couple of posts about it. I talk about it in my book, The Health Detriments of Overly Strenuous, Overly Intense Exercise. And I get criticized. People get angry every time I say that. And I think it's because people who there's this trading of addictions, I think. And so, you know, food addiction is a real thing. And some people will end up addicted to food after dealing with, right, after quitting cigarettes. And then they'll find themselves gaining weight. They've basically traded their addiction to nicotine for an addiction to food. And I think it's one of the things that a lot of people do is trade an addiction to food for an addiction to exercise. Or maybe they come to an addiction to exercise organically through some other pathway. But I think that, you know, exercise is amazing, right? Like, it releases fantastic endorphins and we all love being really fit and healthy. But there's a cusp beyond which exercise is actually undermining your efforts to continue to be healthier. And we see, right, in elite athletes, we see increase of, you know, things like infection, right? They have a much higher infection rate. Like, all of a sudden, the immune system's not functioning anymore. We know that athletes, like, intense exercise actually causes a leaky gut. And so we see this in the scientific literature. And yet, if I make the statement of, you know, exercising at this strenuous, intense level, which of course is different for different people, because what is too much really depends on who you are, like what's your health history, how fit are you now, what type of activity you're doing, how long you're trying to do it for, how good your sleep is, how stressed you are, right? Like a whole pile of things feeds into that. And, but it's one of those things that people don't like to hear, is that exercising too much, and especially I think they don't like to hear it because it's really hard to define too much, but exercising too much isn't good for you. And I think there's, I'm going to let you come up with a great analogy. Come up with an analogy for that one.
Of excessive exercise?
Excessive exercise. We're going to say it's like, it's the same extreme as, you know, cutting calories, you know, cutting your energy intake will help you lose weight. You cut calories too much and you're starving yourself and you trigger all of these starvation signals in your body and you stop losing weight now.
Or even sleep. Right. Like this, if just generally speaking, is sleep good for you? Of course. Oh, my gosh. Sleep is phenomenal for you. But that doesn't mean like you should sleep 16 hours a day. Right. Like that would be.
Wait, I shouldn't. No, I'm joking. Yeah, I think that's okay. That's a better analogy. Yeah. See, analogy king right there.
Well, and I think the other thing that, I mean, the subtitle of my book is How to Eat More, Exercise Less, Lose Weight and Live Better. So, I mean, obviously I'm a big fan of that message, but I think part of the reason some people get riled up about it is, and this also shows how skewed our culture around eating and exercise has become, is, for example, they hear exercise isn't the panacea as being synonymous with you should always take the elevator and you should sit down as much as possible. Yeah. And don't play with your kids. Just set them in front of video games all day. Like those things, walking, using your legs, being a human, right? Like the paleo community gets that really well. but taking the stairs, walking, standing, moving, using your limbs, that's not exercise. That's activity. And like that is just like universally awesome. Exercise is really this... talk about unnatural. I mean, the idea of, if you go back in time just a little bit, the idea of people intentionally or even paying money to engage in intense physical labor would be like, wait, what? that is so you have to take this very, it's very unnatural to have these prescribed and artificial forms of movement, but that doesn't mean it's bad, right? I mean, penicillin is... I mean, I guess it is kind of directly found in nature, but this the internet isn't directly found in nature. That doesn't mean it's bad, but it means that we have to be conscious on how we use it. So exercise is like a very powerful medication where there's very specific forms of exercise that do very specific things in your body and need to be taken in very specific doses. You don't just like reach into your friend's medicine cabinet and say, oh, hey, these pills are working for you. Fabulous. Let me take some of them. It doesn't work that way.
I love, see, another great analogy. I'm just saying, it's another great analogy. Stacey, you still awake over there?
Yeah, I keep trying to comment and my thing's on mute. I said twice now, because obviously I need remedial training and podcasting because I've only been doing it 200 million times. That I think unfortunately for some people, they are just taking medicine in other people's cabinets and they are just kind of jumping all around and grasping at straws, because there is such a confused hodgepodge of information around, which you discussed earlier. And the more that we can be consistent in terms of the messaging from, and I think real food is the best thing that describes kind of all of what we're talking about. And I know that you have the same solution and we have paleo, but I think overall, to Sarah's point earlier, the point is we have a lot in common with raw vegans, and I can get behind almost everything that they're doing with the exception of needing protein. And I just think that is a huge driver behind the success of this quote, real food movement right now, because it's something that people can wrap their brain around and can understand. Yes, that makes sense. I know that MSG isn't a good food for me. What are some of the things that that sound good in this real food movement that I can try that might work for me. And I think that it's overall hopefully a great thing for the community. And I hope and I love that's why, you know, that we can have conversations and, you know, be part of an overall bigger community, because I think it's very helpful for the people that are really just, as you said, middle America, just looking for answers and are really confused. I mean, even my 7-year-old and my almost 10-year-old are confused about what's being taught in the school system. And this is like a complete aside and tangent, but, you know, they're being told by their teachers that words out of their teacher's mouth, not mine, that they understand that the boys don't eat dairy and grains, and they understand how the boys perceive that as not healthy. And the teachers say, we don't disagree. Dairy isn't healthy for you. It makes you sick. So here are the answers to this test. You know, and it's like, I don't know if you're familiar with kind of the education system and standardized tests. But so the message that's, you know, going out to our children, which we can't even figure it out as adults, and now we're kind of putting that complication and confusion onto our children, is like, yes, I acknowledge that dairy in this description of, you know, low fat, high processed, kind of, picture of dairy that's being presented, is not good for you and makes you sick. But go ahead and, answer this question this way, because it's a standardized test and we need to give them the right answers. And I mean, fortunately their parents are educated. We can have that conversation about, expectations and the man and all that kind of stuff. But I think it all plays into that big picture of kind of what confuses people when they get different messages, and, providing, different spins on what are very similar, solutions that are working for a lot of people. I mean, Sarah and I each have our own different health stories about how we each lost weight and how we each regained our health and, you know, have kind of maintained and improved our health over time. And ultimately, everybody has to come up with kind of what works for them. And it's great that there are multiple solutions out there for people to kind of play with, what will help them sustain that healthy lifestyle.
It'll be very interesting, I think, also to see how this evolves and morphs over time, because we saw with, for example, the low carb movement. Like, I'm curious to see how the paleo movement is obviously getting so large that there's got to be some people with some large pocketbooks that are starting to pay attention, because, I mean, they're just in the business of making money, which is fine. We live in a capitalistic culture. So, they're going to, you know, everyone wants gluten-free and now everything is gluten-free, right? What people want, companies will provide. And when you looked, for example, like when low carb became super, 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 super popular, of course, there was then this class of let's, you know, food in quotations that came out that was low carb.
Mm-hmm. I remember low carb ice cream.
Right. But it probably wasn't super, super, super good for your health, because you could be...
Certainly was not super good for my health. I don't think there was a single real ingredient in there.
Absolutely. So you can be low carb and like very slim and unhealthy, as we've talked about. And at the same time, what is interesting, and this might be a fun conversation to have, is you walk into some of these stores like a Whole Foods, and you see this junk food that is made with 100% real food, but it is. I mean, you can get natural salt, sugar, and fat and jam it all together and cover it with 90% fructose agave and call it, paleo, or call it all natural. I'm not about counting calories, but, you've got either end of the spectrum here. You've got 100% natural, but tobacco is 100% natural. That doesn't mean you should put it in your body. And then you have the other end of the spectrum, which is 100% artificial. Just kind of ridiculous analogies. Tobacco is on one end of the spectrum. It's natural, but bad for you. Penicillin is on the other end of the spectrum, or any kind of medication you need to live is on the other end of the spectrum. It's synthetic, but it keeps you alive. So like, where do we end up in this world where either extreme, like saying, oh, it's natural, therefore it's good for you, which is wrong. Snake venom is natural. It's not good for you. Or, you know, it's low carb, it's high carb, it's vegan, it's good for you. You know, where's that median or sane approach, as I would call it?
Yeah, another great analogy, by the way.
Yeah. Venom. Yeah. Now, I do have to say, I've actually heard that analogy before, so I don't think Jonathan could take credit for that one. Fire truck's all you, though. Maybe. So I think maybe like wrap up this conversation. What do you think, Jonathan, is sort of our nation's biggest obstacle towards getting healthy, like as an entire nation? Like what's the barrier that we need to overcome?
We don't actually have a measurement, which I know might sound boring, but it's very difficult to evaluate the health of something if you don't know how to measure that, right? Like how can I, if you ask 10 people on the street what's healthy, you're literally going to get 10 completely different answers. And if you ask McDonald's what's healthy, they'll say anything that has less than 400 calories on it. See, they're the healthy choices on our menu, right? So like that's what, and it's an uphill battle because it's very hard, but you know, we've got patents filed and we're trying to have the alternative measure for the, we need something that can be measured. Like we can measure nutrient density. That's easy to measure. Like we've got it. You take, you know, nutrients divided by calories. That's nutrient density. But there's other things that are involved in food. There's how quickly does it fill you up and how long does it keep you full, right? Certain foods keep you fuller a lot longer than other foods, calorie for calorie. What's the hormonal impact of those foods, right? We kind of have measures for this with glycemic index and glycemic load, but again, that's just one measure. And then there's, you know, the rate at which various foods can be used as energy, right? Protein isn't an energy source. So to consider it on par with fat and carbohydrate is almost silly, because you have energy source, fat, or, you know, fat, structural component and energy source, carbohydrate, energy source, protein, pure structural component. Like if you want to use that as energy, it's got to go through a bunch of chemical changes in your body, and now it's energy. So what we're trying to do, SANE isn't a marketing term. It's an acronym for these four factors: satiety, aggression, nutrition, and efficiency. And simply saying, if we want to look at this from a purely objective scientific perspective, so it's not about, you know, what's best for the environment or what's best for animal health or what's most compliant with this religion's teachings, which are all fine goals, but science. What are objective, quantifiable measures we can use to evaluate food's satiety, its hormonal impact, its nutrition, and its efficiency as being used as energy? And then we really don't need to argue. We can just say, you know, these are the most satisfying foods. These are the most aggressive foods. And the good news is what that science shows is very similar to what common sense would imply. The things that you find directly in nature, generally, they're not all the same, but generally are way saner or way better for you or way higher quality, the things that are processed. But then we actually need to take it one level deeper and say, you know, there's a lot of food found directly in nature. So what are the best options of that that we need to enjoy based on our stage in life, based on our gender? Because it's not the same, right? That which is going to be wonderful for a 22-year-old powerlifter is not the same thing that a 65-year-old diabetic who is severely overweight should be eating. It's just not. They're not the same things. Yes, they will start in nature, but what you pick from nature has to be drilled down into. And that's why we have this sanity scale and all these tools that we're working on developing.
Another wonderful analogy. Sarah, I feel like we need to step up our game.
No, we are not good at analogies. Or not good enough, anyways. The bar has been set very, very high. And no dump truck analogies. I just want to point out, because people who know me know one of my greatest pet peeves is when we make an analogy between some kind of process in the human body and a dump truck. And I just want to like shout out to Jonathan for not using a single dump truck analogy.
Well, and I actually, that was my long-winded answer. I think let me make it real short. you said, you know, what's the one thing we need to do as a nation? And that's actually easy. And that's what we're doing at Sane Solution. And that's to change the conversation from one of quantity, the amount of calories you're eating and the amount of exercise you're getting, to one of quality, which is, what is the quality of food you're eating? And what are the elements of quality that really, really, really matter? Because, you know, some matter more than others. And then what are the elements in exercise that determine quality, and shifting that conversation? And that's, if there's one, like, the reason I most closely align myself to the paleo community of any established community is, when you look at both eating and exercise, one, other communities generally don't have an exercise component. Like, there's no exercise component for veganism or for low carb dieting. But paleo, you know, it's got that quality focus on both the eating side and on the exercise side. And I think that's why it's growing so much, because that's right on and it's working for a lot of people.
So it's about what you put in your dump truck and not how big your dump truck
gosh.
Is.
I had to go there. So on that note, I just want to thank you for joining us on the Paleo View and avoiding the dump truck analogy and saving that for Sarah to follow through with. As a reminder, if people are looking for you for more information, they can find you at sanesolution.com. And your first book they can find, I'm assuming, at all bookstores.
Everywhere.
The Calorie Myth. And remind me one more time what the name of your podcast is. Is it Sane Solution as well? Sane something?
Sane Show.
Sane Show.
Ta-da!
Da-da-da! Awesome. So, Jonathan, thank you again for joining us on the Paleo View. Is there anything else that you wanted to mention that we forgot?
No, I appreciate you giving the shout-out to sanesolution.com. We've been working really hard on that. We were fortunate enough to get some wonderful angel investment, and are really, really working to provide some stuff that will be, you know, mainstream ready and enterprise ready, in terms of, hey, if you want to eat 1200 calories of garbage, Weight Watchers is the right tool set for you. But if you'd rather focus on the quality of what you're eating, we have a whole curriculum and tool set and apps and e-learning that can help you do that more sanely.
I'm looking at the website, and there's a lot of food on here that I would like to eat. The photography of vegetables is very pretty.
In the, like, free side of the website, some, like, rockin' infographics. Just saying.
So I'm saying, it's really pretty. And if you sign up for your, what I'm assuming is, like, a newsletter or something, you get a free download, even, of the Fast Results Blueprint. So, for what that's worth, we'll make sure there's a link in the show notes, but thank you for the work that you're doing to spread the word far and wide. As we discussed, I think that it is the critical mass of where we take this movement, in my opinion, at this point. I know a lot of us are talking conversationally about sustainability and even performance, but to me and my passion, much like you mentioned, the people who are most in need that will be best affected by this focus on real food are the kind of normal day-to-day people. And that's why my personal goal with being a cookbook author was to get into Costco, because I kind of saw that as the pinnacle of being able to reach a mass market who, you know, would have the option of organic vegetables or a giant box of Oreos, and would like to help them make better choices. So I think it's fantastic that you're focused on coming up with such wonderful tools to help people do that seamlessly, painlessly, and focused on their health. So kudos to you, fist bumps, all that kind of stuff. And hopefully we'll see you again not too long. We were sad to not see you at PaleoFX, but I'm sure we'll see you around, right?
Absolutely. Absence makes the heart grow fonder, right?
Ah, yes. That's that.
Definitely.
I guess that's something they say.
I'm sure there's a scientific study about that somewhere.
There's got to be like a bell curve where then you start forgetting, though, right? Can't go too long.
No, I actually think there's quite a bit of science. It's like the affinity bias, where things that you're exposed to frequently, you start to like more unless you really dislike them. So, yeah, it's let's just stick my
before
phrase,
we start
the
geeking
dump truck.
Out.
Let's just put it before in the dump truck.
Right. Yes. Yes, definitely. Go to the dump truck. Before we walk down this new geeky road, well, I'll just have to have you come back, and we can just talk about how to like things and not like things.
Sounds good.
from a scientific perspective. Well, thanks again, Jonathan, and thanks everyone for listening.
Thank you for listening to The Paleo View. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites or by donating through PayPal.
Did you write any of that down, Stacey?
I got it.
All right.
But really, you can
my
just...
My brain is like a sieve, much like my bladder is like a camel.
That was epic.
Yeah, no, I've just given Matt some material to work with.